It's time for Off the Curve with Justin Spiro.
Welcome back to Off the Curve. Justin Spiro here. Happy to have you. You know, I get hammered over and over again for not having enough Michigan guests on this show, and I think they just see the conga line of Michigan State people here and just assume it's a Spartan show or I'm going to say something mean or whatever. So occasionally I do have to go into my Rolodex of people that already know me and don't hate me that much. So we did that tonight. Jack Johnson, my buddy, come on in, Jack. Happy to have you back. You've been on this show in different forms, I think, three times now. It's great to have you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, of course. Always great to be here. Always great to talk to you.
So I have to start from the Detroit tie-in. The Red Wings signed almost 2 weeks ago now, JT Comper, who you know, not just as a alumnus of your school there in Ann Arbor, but as your teammate, a Stanley Cup winning teammate of yours, as a matter of fact. So tell me, what's sort of your read on this? Because the feedback locally is like good signing, no problems with it. You know, can he sustain that top six role? All that stuff is the question. Or is he just the league's best third line guy? I don't know. But talk to me about what's he like as a teammate, as a player? Can you, sort of expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll try. I mean, I have nothing but awesome things to say about JT. You know, I could start off. I think everyone knows how great he was as a hockey player and how big of a role he played for us. He'll surely be missed on our team. And he was a great pickup for the Red Wings. No question. I mean, he's a great player. I'm a huge fan. You're forever bonded with the teammate that you've won with like that. And, you know, as a person, he used to sit directly behind me on the plane and he'd always try and get me going on long plane rides here and there and get me going on rants because he thought he knew how to push my buttons, but sometimes I would just humor him. But no, I mean, we had a great relationship. I think we always will. I had the Michigan connection, even though we never played together there, but that was always a fun thing to talk about, the differences in our times there and also the similarities and the things we loved about it. But I wish him nothing but the best. He'll surely be missed, but you know, that's part of pro sports, and hopefully I'll get to catch up with him at an alumni outing.
I think he's going to be a good player for Detroit. I think he's, it's just a matter of what it looks like. And with your guys' cap going up constantly, it's always tough to assess these contracts. Like, I certainly don't think it's a bad deal. The big question in Detroit is, you know, was that second line production that, you know, he was forced into with injuries initially, like, is that the real guy or was he just playing with a really good team out there, even with the injuries going on? And I don't know. I see him as a legitimate 20 goal guy. Do you see him being potentially, you know, at that level? Is he that quality of a player? I don't think this is like a, you know, flash in a pan thing. I think he's a like legitimate good player.
No, I completely agree with you. I think there's also going to be some things that the average fans, you know, might not appreciate about his game, his defensive awareness, his all around game. I think he was a great 200 foot player, great performer in the playoffs for us. He's also going to bring things that people aren't going to be able to see or measure, like his professionalism in the locker room, during practice, and being a great teammate. Those are going to be things that are crucial and valuable that people aren't going to be able to measure or see on a stat sheet.
Yeah, I thought he was great in your guys' Stanley Cup run and was critical in a couple of those big spots. And I know the Red Wings don't have this whole Stanley Cup, like what's this guy going to look like in the finals problem yet, you know, a good problem to have. But if they do get there, he's done it and performed really well. He was not just along for the ride. He had some huge moments during that 2 month run. And I think he's a guy that would help any team. But, you know, as this team tries to progress and graduate from the rebuild, that's going to be a great guy to have in place just in the room on the ice. I think it's just a good pickup there. So your team in Colorado, a little bit farther along in their rebuild, and as in it's completely done and has been done for a while, and you guys are on a few year run where I would argue you're probably the best team in the league if health is granted. That's my opinion. I thought that before you got there. You obviously had a opportunity to leave for another city. I know there, you know, there's always teams that are calling you when these periods come up. You know, I've been following that closely over the years. So I know you would have had an opportunity to go elsewhere. What's sort of the reason for going to Colorado? Is there something beyond just, oh, they're really good? Like, take me through that a little bit.
I mean, well, there's a lot of things. I mean, the number one, the biggest pull is you believe you have a chance to win. And you, when you've already done it, you know, that belief is always going to be there because you know you've got the guys in the room to do it. And there's always going to be a little bit of change. That's just pro sports, as you know, we've all seen through any sport and throughout the years. But you know, all the you know, the big dogs are still there and all that. And you know, beyond that, having that chance to win, which is so exciting going to training camp. You know, I love the city. I love the organization, the people working there. I love even the weather there. It's sunny every day. It might be snowing, but there's sunny every day. It's sunny every day. And when you pull out in the morning and you're heading to the rink and it's beautiful sunshine and the mountains there, it just, you know, helps your attitude out so much in the dog days of the year. And, my family's grown to love their time out there. And, there's so many great things about it. You know, I can't just pinpoint it on having a chance to win in a great team, but you know, that's always kind of the top priority, especially when you're at this stage of my career.
I mean, it's obviously an incredible team on the ice, and the coaching staff is fantastic. I think that's a lot of stuff that people can see what maybe not be as obvious to, you know, someone like me or just in the general public who's not within those walls or covering the team professionally. It comes off to me as a first-class organization just in how they handle things. And the best example, when you had your 1,000th game, I mean, they bent over backwards. I mean, I would have thought you played your whole career there.
Yeah.
The banner-raising ceremony where serendipitously Chicago ends up on the schedule for the first game, and they're like, hey, like dragged you into the ceremony, made you a big part of it. Is my outside read fair? Is Colorado just a great organization sort of in its spirit, not just on the ice?
Oh yeah. I mean, I can't say enough about the organization and the people from top to bottom, from all the way from, you know, ownership, with the Kroenke family, Joe Sakic, Chris McFarland, coaching staff, my teammates, I mean, just the people working at the security door. You know, I've gotten to know everyone, and it's just a pleasure to be there. And it just, like I said, the other part of the draw is the organization, the people that are there. You get to go to work, and when you love the people that you work with and the people you interact with every day, it's special, because not everyone can say that. And I feel like a very blessed person that I get to go back to an organization where I feel that way.
Yeah, and I was conditioned to hate them forever just because we grew up. You were the one guy that actually liked them back when everybody hated them. Like, you liked both teams. You weren't like anti-Detroit, but you've always been more of like a player guy, and you love Sakic and
Forsberg. I appreciated talent. Yeah.
You were more player than team. But it just, you know, I was out my first time ever at an Avs game in Denver was your 1,000th game, which, you know, I wasn't going to miss that. And I was honestly expecting kind of stick tap thing, throw you on the board, like give you a round of applause and kind of move on, just because, you know, you had been there for less than a year. It was your first year there. Yeah. And I was blown away. You would have thought it was celebrating a milestone for Joe Sakic or Patrick Roy or something. There was no spared, you know, energy just because you had gotten there, you know, a few months earlier. So I just, that said a lot about them. And it was just a wild experience being out there, and you have a newfound respect for their fans. It's just a great hockey city.
Oh, it is. And going back to that, I completely agreed with you. I was blown away at that. I mean, I didn't feel worthy of that. But I'm deeply appreciative of it. It's one of those moments in my career that I'll never forget. You know, I had no idea what to expect, but if I had to guess, you know, I was more along your lines. And but it's just one of those things that, I mean, they do things above and beyond, and it's a first class organization. And yeah, touching on the fans, I mean, it's that building's rocking all the time, and I feel like the fan base is there. The people there in general, I mean, they come to a hockey game, I believe, with the right spirit and frame of mind, that they're there to have a great time. And they make it a fun environment for us. You know, there's fun, you know, division rivalry games where we come out in third uniforms and the building's decorated a little bit different, or, you know, we've a big Eastern Conference team coming in. It's, you know, it's always a fun vibe in that building. And I think it's a phenomenal building to play in. I think it's one of the best buildings in the league, and the atmosphere and the team being great, all that stuff kind of makes for a perfect storm.
Yeah, I mean, two banners in, what, 12, 13 months there with Denver winning in the NBA and now you guys. So it's becoming a good haul with some, because it's just, it's that, you know, needs a little tradition there. Colorado has a lot of it, but then, you know, kind of backslid for a little bit before popping back up, and the Nuggets had never won. So it's becoming a title building. There's something about that. We used to talk about it with the Joe. It's like the Joe was so decrepit, especially by the end, but it just saw so many great players and so many great moments, and the banners are up there, and it just changes the vibe. I think that Colorado franchise, just the whole experience, you know, being 1 degree away from it and knowing you and just having been there, it's a top 3 to 4 organization just in how they handle their business. I mean, in any sport that I've been around a lot of places, road trips, different sports, and I was blown away. I'm like now the second Detroit / Colorado Avalanche fan. I don't have a choice, but it's a fantastic franchise.
It is. And like I said, I can't say enough about it. And I just feel really blessed to be a part of it and have the opportunity to go back. My whole family is very grateful, and we're going to go back in and try and put our best foot forward to do it again.
And I'll finish here on the Avs. What's your role there? I mean, not on the ice. I mean, in the room, as opposed to Chicago. So you're signing with Chicago last year. I think it was made very clear to you, correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, hey, like, you're the veteran. We really want you to be a voice in here and set the example and all that stuff, all the cliches they were asking from you. Is it different going into Colorado where there's a lot of other veterans, even though you are, I think the elder statesman now with how I'm gone, but is it just a different experience there?
It's definitely a different vibe in the room. Just because of the age difference, right? Like I actually got a kick out of being in the Chicago room, listening to some of those guys. And, you know, I would kind of get some of my pop culture education from some of the young guys with the new terminology and lingo and, even social media stuff that would make me laugh. But I don't think I'm any less vocal in the Colorado room. I don't know. You'd have to ask, maybe if you get JT on here, you can ask him, but I wouldn't say I'm quiet in the room, but I think the conversations are just different when you're talking amongst more people that are your age versus when you feel like you're talking to, you know, your younger brother or something. They might have more questions for you versus, you know, in the Colorado locker room, maybe you're having more free flowing conversations where there's some give and take both ways. But I don't think I'm any less quiet in either one. Conversations are just a lot different.
Yeah, best sort of demonstrated in terms of the differences between the two franchises and the age. When you got to Colorado, I know he's since moved up, but Sakic is the GM. It's this guy that we're watching while we're little kids. You get to Chicago, you ended up traded by a guy younger than you, right? Isn't the Chicago GM younger than you are? Or we are?
Yeah, I believe so. Same age, maybe 1 year younger. But that was cool. I mean, I had a Kyle Davidson, I can't say enough great things about him and the way he treated me and his communication with me. Chicago was an awesome experience. I feel, again, very blessed. I was there for a short time, but I have nothing but great things to say about Chicago. That was an awesome organization. And they treated my family and myself, and it was a cool experience. I mean, you've been to a lot of Chicago Blackhawks games. The United Center is a special place to play. The fans there, the anthem alone is an experience in itself. You hear up anthems other places, they're kind of let down after that one. Blackhawk uniforms are pretty awesome. So I got to keep a Blackhawks jersey, which was pretty cool to put that one in the collection. But it's being traded in that scenario too. It was a little bit different because I had it, you know, they were pretty clear in that was from the minute I got there that was probably going to happen. Kind of dependent on how I was playing and injuries, blah, blah, blah. But in a perfect world there, I was probably going to be traded. But the communication line was always open. And it was a pretty, pretty cool way that they went about it because they could have handled it differently. They didn't have to do what they did. But again, another organization going above and beyond what I felt like they even had to do.
Yeah, you might not even remember this. I remember sitting on a plane with you and we were asking each other a bunch of dumb. We did our hockey draft. We do all these like crazy hypotheticals and stuff. And I asked you to name like your favorite jersey from an original six team and your favorite jersey from a team, anybody other than the original six, because the original six, it's like, those are the six best ones. At the time you wrote, and this was years ago, you wrote Colorado as your favorite non-original six jersey and Chicago is your favorite original six. So it's kind of funny you wore them back to back. Like those were your two favorite sweaters. And that, the Blackhawk jersey is just unmatched, man. I mean, I think you
know, I think those that list probably still holds up. I think Colorado's got pretty underrated uniforms. I think they're pretty sweet.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. So I want to move on to the painful area for me, the Michigan stuff, which I mostly kid. Honestly, I have a lot of respect for University of Michigan, and it's an incredible place. And certainly if you're going there for an education, but obviously the athletic department is incredible as well. A little bit less fun to go there than East Lansing, let's face it, but everything else about it's pretty fantastic. You were a big Michigan dreamer from the time I met you. I mean, we met at a baseball camp when we were like 11 or 12 years old, that you were a big, you know, Michigan fan, and that was always the dream, really. You didn't really talk about the NHL. I think I talked about the NHL more than you did, ironically. Yeah. Like, why was it Michigan? And what was it about it? Was it just they're the big brand, or was there something about it that appealed to you even when we were, you know, farting around in science class in sixth grade?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for starters, I never thought I'd be good enough to play in the NHL. So that was never like really in the vision. I was always just hoping I'd be good enough to play college sports. To go to Michigan in particular, I mean, when I was a little kid, your priorities and everything kind of change as you get older. But I fell in love with the fight song. I thought it was the coolest fight song. And I fell in love with the helmets. I thought the winged helmet was so cool, and particularly the Michigan hockey helmet, because, you know, I think, like, if you look at football, there's a lot of great football helmets out there, right? Like, I mean, you know, I'm not proud enough to admit that, you know, like Ohio State has a great helmet, Notre Dame, right? I mean, I think SC's got a cool helmet. I think there's tons of great football helmets, but in the sport of hockey, nobody had ever done anything cool with the helmet. It was always just a plain colored, whatever your jersey or main colors are, you wore a black, white, or blue, whatever helmet. Michigan had the winged helmet, and I always wanted to wear the winged hockey helmet. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. So when I was a little kid, you start off with those things, and and then as I got older, it just kind of grew and grew, and then there was a couple, you know, more perks here and there. I realized how great of a hockey program it was. It's the most winning college hockey program of all time. And you just hope that someday maybe you'd be good enough to be a part of it. Academically, it's funny, my wife, as you know, went to the University of Virginia, and we check every year to see who was the higher ranked public school in the country, because they're always in the, you know, top three or four, ranked by Forbes. And so it's like, or not Forbes, U.S. News Report, excuse me. So that became a thing of importance to me, really importance to me, is being able to go to a very highly ranked academic school with the sports element. I thought was a really rare combination. And I know I'm kind of rambling on here, but another thing that drew me to Michigan was I wanted to walk the hallways with other great athletes. You know, I wanted to walk the hallways with a Heisman Trophy candidate or an Olympic swimmer. I wanted to be surrounded by greatness, because I thought it would bring out the best in me as well.
The fight song is unassailable. As big of a Spartan as I am, I have a giant commission painting of the Spartan statue. I'm as big of a Spartan as it, I mean, it's a two answer question with that. It's always the Notre Dame fight song or University of Michigan.
And right, I agree.
I mean, I change my mind constantly. There's days where I'm like, the Michigan's probably got to be number one. And then it's Notre Dame by a hair. It's always close. Anybody that says anything but those two, I don't know if they like can't hear. I mean, there's so much to me, whatever's third, there's a lot of really good ones. You know, I think like USC's great. Wisconsin's great. Yeah, there's a lot of ones I really like, but it's like a distant third. Do you agree Notre Dame is like a rightful kind of like co?
Well, no, I agree. I think Notre Dame's got a great one. I mean, it's iconic. I think both schools have iconic fight songs, and that's rare in itself. I mean, there's a lot of schools, I couldn't even tell you what their fight songs are, but they're big schools and prominent brands and stuff. And yeah, I just don't know. But I think for whatever reason, I mean, those two fight songs are iconic, and the two helmets are iconic. I mean, all you have to do is see the helmet, you know what school it is. You know, but like I said, in hockey in particular, especially at that time, nobody had done anything cool with a helmet in hockey. So that, it was really rare. And the first time I went to a Michigan hockey game, you know, they come out in the winged helmet, which had never been seen before in any other hockey team. And the band's playing the fight song, the whole state, you know, arena's, you know, fist pumping to hail to the victors. And I was just enamored with it. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, the environment. I mean, I was the biggest Michigan hockey fan for 2 years, and then I seized that. But we're both, you know, same age in college together at the same time. I did not go pro after my sophomore year of college like you did. But your experience there was just unbelievable because I saw it. I mean, I was there with you just watching it. And, you know, you said it, the environment at Yost in particular. I mean, you can be indifferent to sport and just go to a game at Yost and just be mesmerized by the atmosphere. You don't even have to like hockey, athletics, or really anything about it. I just think the environment there, I would love that at Mon. I lament the fact that Michigan State cannot match that, but, you know, that's a long list. Yost is just a one of one. It's a weird place, and I mean that in a compliment. Like, nothing really looks like Yost out there, like in the hockey world. It's just like an odd place in the most wonderful, eccentric way. I'm a big fan of it, despite my allegiances. We pulled up a little, Ben, if you can throw up the video of Jack talking about Yost. I think this was like between your first and second year, maybe it was mid first year. It wasn't dated. That's why it wasn't my lack of diligence on this, but this is Michigan student Jack Johnson talking about the experience at Yost and why he likes it.
I don't know if I can, you know, describe it in words, really. It's, you know, it's something I've always watched since I was a little kid. And when I finally did it, you know, put goosebumps on me. My favorite part of the game is always coming out right before the face-off and the band's playing the victors. And, you know, the whole stadium, you know, the whole rink is on their feet, you know, doing the, singing the fight song. And it's an unbelievable experience, you know. And unfortunately, I don't know if I can even describe it.
Is that's ring true now, sure, many years later?
Boy, what a teenager I look like, huh? Backwards hat, real professional.
Yeah, you weren't professional yet. So, I mean, I think it was like a kid interviewing a kid at that point. That was like a student run thing. Yeah.
No, but I mean, that's bang on. I mean, even to this day, it's such a unique environment. Like you said, I mean, it wasn't originally a hockey rink, right? It's a field house. And, you know, your little trivia for the day, it's actually the oldest field house in America. So I mean, it was converted into a hockey rink. So I mean, that's part of its uniqueness and the history of it. And it's so cool. I mean, the locker room is actually on the second floor, so the team has to come down the steps, and the people on that side of the building can start to hear the steps. You know, like it sounds like a stampede of the team coming down, and when they start to hear that, the band fires up, and you know the whole rink is in cadence at that point, knowing that here comes the team. And I mean, all those things, it's so unique. And then it's just littered with banners, right? I mean, it's just littered. CCHA, WCHA, you know, when the switched conferences, NCAA champions, it's just so unique and cool. And, you know, to this day, I've played in a lot of cool arenas, a lot of big games. Nothing's like a game at Yost Arena. And I mean, it's, you know, you say you wish Mon was like that. I mean, I wish every college rink was like that, because I could have played the other half of my games in a rink just as cool. But you're right. There's only one Yost, and it's unique. I can't wait to take my family there. I got to wait till I'm done playing, because my schedules always, you know, conflict. But I can't wait to take my wife and kids to a game there, because it's unlike anything they've ever seen.
You seemed at the time almost bashful about the way you were received there. You were, I think it's objectively true, like the fan favorite during your 2 years. Certainly at the games I was at, you received a lot of ovations, you the most individualized chants and all that. What was your relationship like with the fans there? I mean, was it sort of embarrassing? I mean, it like in a good way, like, oh, guys, leave me alone. Like, I'm, you seemed almost like kind of shy about how received you were there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm naturally a more reserved person and, you know, shy. But I mean, like the ice rink is your stage. And you know, when I got out there, I'm comfortable because I know how to play hockey. And I just had such a blast playing at Michigan. And you know, I always felt like it's never about you, right? Like that's one of the cool things about playing college sports is no player is coach or anything's ever bigger than the university and the school and what you represent. You know, no player will ever be bigger than the winged helmet or the block M. So, you know, I think that was always part of it. And I just always just wanted to win for Michigan, you know, because I knew if you got that sweep on Saturday night, you know, it didn't just feel good for you and the program, but, you know, all the kids that go to school there were happier on Monday morning. And, you know, the teachers that had you in class that came to the game, it always kind of helped lift the atmosphere. No different than, you know, a big win on a football Saturday or March Madness or anything like that. I mean, hockey's not as big as that. You know, it's a smaller scale, but same type of feeling.
It's hard to believe that, you know, Michigan State wins that national title, like, right, you know, on your way out. And it's a good program, good history and all that. And then they haven't even been really decent since. I mean, they had one good year. Then it was like a long run, almost a decade and a half of nothing. Finally, you know, back up off the mat this year. I just think it's better when both those schools are good. Michigan's mostly done their part. It's just you guys can't get over that final hump, but I just think it's better to have Michigan State back and roaring a little bit. Can I get you to begrudgingly admit that before I move on to your former coach?
Talking about the hockey program, correct? Michigan State.
Yeah, hockey. Right. Just Michigan State hockey is just better.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, being very objective, I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I used to get to go occasionally. It was a big treat to get to go to the Michigan State game at the Joe. You know, one team would always give up a home game, whether it was at Munn or Yost, to play at the Joe, and they would pack it, right? And I mean, half the stadium was in maize and blue, half the stadium was in green and white. Both bands were there, which is really cool. That's part of the pageantry of college sports. And I mean, you'd pack the Joe like you would for a Red Wing playoff game. And both programs were elite and at the top. And quite frankly, they should be. I mean, you really don't even have to leave the state of Michigan for recruiting. There's enough kids there to be good. You know, you start going nationally or internationally, and now you're a national championship contender. But I mean, I think college hockey is better when Michigan and Michigan State are both great. You know, it's no different than, you know, any other sport with big rivalries. I do agree with that. And I think there's no reason why Michigan State shouldn't be good, because they always were when I was a kid. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have great games against State when I was there, and they still had good players. And I've got good friends that went to Michigan State.
Well, speaking of having great games against Michigan State, your last game as a collegian at Joe's Arena when you were at the University of Michigan, right at the end of your sophomore year, toward the end, you guys had a 3-goal lead going into intermission. They did a little bit of a feature on you and talking about your impact there and what you had coming up with the NHL draft, your decision, or not the NHL draft, the NHL, if you're going to go into the league or not, or if you're going to be back for your junior year. So we pulled some of that. I want to play that for the audience here. And you, I don't know if you've even seen this since it came out, you know, what, 17 years ago or whatever it is. So, Ben, can you roll that for us?
I don't know what you got going here.
It'll be a
Jeff
good one.
Jeff Johnson has made a huge impact on the program. In just 2 years, he is already 8th on Michigan's all-time list for goals by a defenseman.
I don't think there's been a college defenseman since Rob Blake that has had that kind of impact on college hockey.
Here's Johnson scores! Johnson's streak continues.
He probably had higher expectations than anyone coming into this program, and he's probably not only lived up to them, but taken a few steps above that. So, I mean, you ask the players to play against him, they'll tell you they know he's out on the ice and they have to watch for him.
Trying to settle it down. There's a big hit. Given the way he's played at the college level, the jump to the pros obviously isn't far off.
Can't give you a timeline for myself. I'm just taking it day by day. And the most important thing to me right now is you know, beat Michigan State.
I don't know that we've had a player that's too good for college hockey, but I've always told Jack that when you're ready to leave, I'll drive you to the airport.
I mean, just high praise from Red, saying the most ready guy he's ever seen, the most impactful, you know, freshman the year prior coming in. I mean, he was just heaping praise on you. Just a little bit on your relationship with Red and what he was like as a coach and what it meant to you and means to you now, even in hindsight, looking back at him saying those things about you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he meant the world to me. He was another big reason why I wanted to go there. I wanted to play for Red Berenson. You know, what he's accomplished on and off the ice, you know, it was something to aspire to. You know, and I always look for his advice, his guidance. And, you know, even to this day, I got to finally finish my degree at Michigan last year. And he was my second phone call. I called my wife first. And then I called Coach Berenson because I was I made a promise to him when I left. That I would finish my degree, and you know, it took me longer than I wanted to, but I got it done. And you know, I let him know that finishing that degree from Michigan meant more to me actually than anything I had accomplished in hockey. You know, that was right before we won the Stanley Cup. That's right there with it. But yeah, I mean, his impact on me was huge and still is. And every time I get a chance to see him, you know, I really soak that in because I appreciate everything he's done for me, the program. And, you know, I think he's just as much, if not more proud of his players that went on to be businessmen and doctors and, you know, go to the Ross School of Business. And, you know, I think what he stands for at Michigan is what Michigan's all about. And you know, the world would be a better place if there was more Red Berensons.
He's a demanding guy by reputation as a coach. What is he like? Is that fair? Was he a yeller? Was he strict? I mean, what, just like as the hockey coach, Red Berenson, I think he is a great guy by all accounts. The hockey coach, Red, what's he like?
Definitely not a yeller. Which I mean, we used to joke as players, he'd give you the look, and that was almost worse than getting yelled at because it made you his. It was like, it was such a look of like, you know, disappointment and frustration. And it just made you feel like, oh man, I really let him down. And that was almost worse than getting yelled at. But he treated us like pros actually. And, you know, in the hockey program there, he treated us like pros and he expected us to act like pros. And I believe it elevated our room. I mean, he did. He set the bar for recruiting there, not only talent, but the quality of people that came in. And it really elevated our program and our teams every year. And I mean, he built that program. You know, they were kind of down and out, and then he came in and took over, and he made Michigan hockey what it is today. And yeah, I can't say enough. I'd go through a wall for him today at 36 years old, just like I would have at 18.
Yeah, it's high praise for him to say, you know, that he built them into what they are today, because in my opinion, and I could not be more jaded anti-Michigan. It's like the opposite of a bias. Like I'm actually the best person to trust a compliment on. It's one of the 7 or 8 coolest, like funkiest, most special individual programs in the country. Like if you want to talk about Notre Dame football, you know, people put Michigan football on there. Like it's just in terms of a sport and its connection to a university, it's to me easily top 10. If you look at the fan passion, the history, you know, the uniforms, the, you know, the fight song, the venue, it's one of those elite programs in terms of cachet, style, history and whatnot. And I think he's played such a big role in that. Am I insane to put Michigan hockey on that big of a pedestal, begrudging as I may be?
No, I mean, I think you got a big argument for number one. If you just want to go, you know, I mean, non-biased, it's the most winning college hockey program of all time. They've had more first rounders than anybody. I think right now more NHL players than anybody, tied for number one in national championships. It's tough to beat, you know, and then you know, if you're non-biased, you factor in, you know, the uniforms, the fight song, the environment, the arena, you know, the history of coaching. It's hard to beat, you know, and that's, you know, all the reasons why I fell in love with it. And listen, there's a lot of great programs, no question. But you know, you asked me why I fell in love with it, and you know, that's why.
Yeah, and there's plenty to love about it. Like, if I can come around to it, it's so cool. Like, even the acoustics there are accidentally great. Like, there's no way they built that with acoustics in mind, but the marching band, it just like thunders off the walls. It's just such a cool place. And, you know, I can't blame anybody for, you know, wanting to play there, certainly in the hockey realm. It's just so cool. So I'll transition to this. We're almost wrapping you up here, but I want to talk about your longevity in the NHL. I'm fascinated by this. I think more so than you. I'm the one that's always sending you this stuff and you're like, oh, cool, whatever. And it's about you. I would think, you know, you'd be more into it, but I'm into this. I'm fascinated by the kinesiology aspect of athletics just generally, you know, sort of durability, performance maximization. I know you like that stuff too in your background with Barwis. Your NHL career, I want to put in context, because if I just say a number, it's not really going to work. So Ben, we'll have you throw up the Jack Johnson graphic we made. So you are at currently 1,107 NHL games played, 1107. So you're at 208th all-time in the NHL, which is nuts, 34th all-time among American skaters. I believe you are 9th or 10th among American defensemen. Your percentage tile is insane. You're more than basically 98%. Of NHL players historically. So you're in the top 2% if you don't play another game. You're under contract to do so. And then you look at the names. I mean, I just picked some of the cooler ones. But, I mean, Maurice Rocket-Richard, Mario Lemieux, Henrik Zetterberg, Ted Lindsay. I mean, look at those names of the guys that you have more games played than. It's really unbelievable. And I'm fascinated by, you know, the ability to stay around that long. We all know you're talented. I mean, you're a pro hockey player that went third overall. Like, the talent was there. So that's a given. Strictly in terms of sustainability and playing as many games as you have and for how long that you have, how have you managed to pull this off? Has there been anything that you can attribute it to in particular?
Man, I mean, well, first of all, going back to that, the names on that is nuts. I mean, that seems like a fake list.
You got more games than they do. I mean, I know when we had some issues, but that's part of the problem is the health. Yeah. You got to stay healthy.
Yeah. I mean, but it's just hard to believe. I mean, those are iconic names and, you know, I don't belong in the same sentence with, you know, a lot of those names. You gotta be lucky sometimes, you know, I think there's definitely some luck involved. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. But you know, the other thing is I just try to work hard. I mean, we're zooming here. I mean, I'm in an Airbnb down in Florida because I go wherever Mike Barwis is. You know, and you've talked about Mike Barwis before on your show. You know, I've again was lucky. I crossed paths with him when I was coming back as a pro after my second year in Los Angeles. So my second year in the league, he had just gotten to Michigan as the new head strength and conditioning coach, actually for the football program. And he and I met, he invited me to come in and he said, I'll train you. And I started training with him and he was cutting edge of the science and, you know, not just kind of, you know, kicking my butt every day, but there was a purpose and a science behind it. You know, the strength, the speed, mobility, flexibility, you know, all those things are ingrained in his programs and, you know, I trust him and I just keep trying to work hard and I keep going to him. And, the other thing too, is as I get older, I quite frankly try to work even harder than I did the year before, because I think as you get older, the guys that kind of say, you know, I'm getting older, I should, you know, back off a little bit or like that, I think that's when you start to fall off the cliff, because we're all fighting Father Time. He's going to catch us sooner or later. It's just how long can you hold them off? And, you know, I think when you keep pushing and I'm going to push until the wheels fall off. I mean, why not? I think, God takes away what you don't use and I'm going to keep using it until he takes it away. So trusting Mike and just working hard, that's what I pretty much attribute it all to. I'll give some credit to just some good genetics in terms of staying healthy. And, yeah, that's pretty much my long-winded answer for you.
although I slightly agree that, you know, Mario Lemieux may have been like a slightly better hockey player, Yeah.
Better than Mario on that one.
Has an argument for being the best ever. I mean, if he had stayed healthy. Well,
you know, I agree with you. We could sit down and have a long argument with he could be the best that ever played.
If you're taking anybody for a 7-game series and you're somehow guaranteeing me everyone's healthy for the whole duration of this, certainly among forwards, you can get into the defenseman priority stuff, but man, that guy was great. But just you look at some of the names, it has nothing to do with, you know, comparing you guys as hockey players. It's just seeing guys that had such an impact in this league and had long careers and were Hall of Famers, you know, on the first ballot with no question. And, you know, you've played longer than they have. I wonder, you know, if one day you're going to wake up and just be like, holy shit, I had a great run. I mean, you're already effectively at 98% above everybody that's ever, like, just making the league was beyond your dreams. Could you have ever imagined you'd be in the top 2 percentile and counting? I mean, you could keep going up.
No. And the one thing I should have mentioned too is at the end of the day, you got to love what you do. No matter what you're doing, And I still love the game. And more importantly, I still love the process to have to be able to be ready to play. You know, I'm not dragging going into the gym. I still get excited to go in there. And, you know, I know my wife appreciates it, so I don't get, you know, too fat and out of shape yet. But it's just you still have to have passion for it and love it. And, you know, I'm sure that's one thing that all the guys on that list had in common to be able to make it that long. You still have to love what you do.
There's people out there, I'm not going to name names, that think your wife may be the best athlete in your household, but for a couple ACL injuries in her day may have actually taken the title there. What do you make of that speculation?
She's been backed up. Well, I can tell you from firsthand, we've done it. We've done enough things together that they're not exaggerating. And she's gotten backed on that comment by pretty much everyone in the family.
she's like a really, I mean, even with all of her, like, I think it was two separate major knee injuries, maybe three. I know she had a lot of bad injury luck, and that's part of
what major ones in college. Yeah. Playing soccer at Virginia and then three more knee surgeries post-college.
Yeah. I mean, she's an athlete still, despite the injury baggage. I mean, not that I'm the best barometer, but she kicked my ass in basketball. I know that much. That's when I was a little better shape. That was a few years ago. Your athlete family was, a step shy of viral. Maybe it was viral. It was close to viral if it wasn't. When you guys won the Stanley Cup in Colorado a little over a year ago, and it was a picture in particular. I don't know if a guy at the club tweeted this. Somebody tweeted it that was there. It was like their actual picture. Ben, can you throw up the picture if we have that? Yes, this is your two brothers-in-law and your sister-in-law. So AJ Hawk, longtime Packer, Super Bowl champion. Obviously you. Brady there holding, I think, is that that's not the Unitas. I don't even know what is that one? I know the Maxwell's next to him.
Yeah, no, I believe he's holding the Unitas and she's holding the Maxwell and she's got her Olympic medal around her neck.
And yeah, that's Alicia Sacramone, who obviously an American Olympian and champion and the wife of Brady. Is this like a weird dinner table when you guys are all together? Because I've been there for major event stuff, like obviously your wedding and that. So I've seen a little bit of it. It seems kind of competitive, but in a funny way. What's your take on that?
Well, it's funny because there was actually a bunch of trophies missing, but some of the, you know, a lot of us can't find some of the trophies anymore. But that's not even all the athletes in the family. It's actually awesome. I mean, we all get along so well. And it's funny, but when we're all around, I feel like we talk about everything but sports almost. It's a cool thing. And, you know, you've got some major schools and rivalries represented, but there's really not any trash talking or anything like that. It's I think there's too much love and respect all the way around that it's like we're just beyond that. And we've all got kids. All the cousins are so close. It's honestly nothing but just laughter and fun and jokes and good meals when we're all together.
Now, you had the longest career, and it was, you know, obviously a few different sports we're talking about, but you're the only one still active, and you had the longest career, even if you retired, you know, tomorrow. So I think you have a little bit of a trump card there. It's a fascinating dynamic. Like, they're all such awesome people, but they're very different. Brady's very, you know, talkative and opinionated and so eloquent. And that's why he's such a, I mean, I've said for a long time, he's my favorite under 40 broadcaster in the game right now. I think he's fantastic. And, you know, then AJ is so chill and laid back, and you're kind of like somewhere in the middle. And it's just a fascinating dynamic there.
Yeah. And I mean, you get AJ behind closed doors. You get AJ at a family dinner, he's talking a lot more. Sometimes we can get him going where he's kind of holding court, which really is a riot. But I mean, the whole family, I mean, we got, you know, the uncles all played college football. We had uncles play college football, Brown, Kentucky, Western Kentucky. I mean, we got athletes all around, and it's a great time. I mean, it's funny. We've joked that, you know, you gotta be the prerequisite to be in the family is a D1 athlete. So that's kind of the running joke of the family.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't pull that wedding photo up because that's a personal matter, but yeah, there's like a picture out there in my, you know, album somewhere of the wedding party. It's like, your brother was like in high school or something. So like, he's exempt. But and still was a D1 athlete, by the way. But so he would qualify anyway, but at the time was exempt. And it's just like, you know, first round pick, you know, silver medalist. It's, you know, two Michigan hockey guys, like another NHL guy. And then it's me. Like, it's unbelievable. It's the most like not worthy photo ever. It's the most unintentionally hilarious photo of like, you put the little bios like in a, you know, bullet point runner, like what people are, what their background is. Man, I'm glad that didn't happen because that'd be embarrassing. But that's it seems like the prerequisite. Your kids, like with all the kids, you know, the cousins combined, someone's going to roll out and be a stud at something. It's just a matter of time and what sport it feels like. You guys have that culture there.
We'll see. I mean, it's pretty cool at family outings. I mean, when we have big football games and stuff, and, you know, we have fun. Like, we got to go down for Brady just baptized his firstborn son, Kavanaugh, in Notre Dame. So we had a big family trip down to Notre Dame, and you know, all the kids, we took them into the bookstore, and you know, the kids got some Notre Dame gear, and you know, I allow my kids to wear Notre Dame football stuff because, you know, Uncle Brady went there, and you know, so we all have fun supporting each other. And you know, my boys are learning about Ohio State football because Uncle AJ went there. And you know, so it's cool. It's a really cool dynamic. And you know, we all just support each other and love each other. And yeah, like I said, we have nothing but respect and love for each other.
Yeah, it seems that way. My favorite story, and just when you guys were talking about like, hey, maybe we'll do a picture with everyone's awards. Was it Brady? Like, couldn't find the Maxwell or something? I know you mentioned he found it eventually, but
we'll find that. But it, you know, AJ's got a few college awards, you know, like his linebacker awards and stuff that I think he let the kids play with it. And, they don't know where it is in the house and stuff, but I mean, he won them. Yeah, it's all that matters. But there's a few awards that we just like couldn't find because who knows if they're in storage or the kids probably took the football off and threw it in the woods, or you know, who knows.
I love Brady misplacing the Maxwell trophy. It's hey honey, have you seen my Maxwell trophy? It's like you're misplacing like your wallet.
I think those are all in safe spots now.
Yeah, that was funny. It's like, oh, we don't know if we're going to find this or not. It's like, if I had won anything like that, it'd be like encased in glass, bulletproof glass. And it's just when you win a thousand things, I guess that's the nature of it. So, man, I appreciate it. You joined us kind of on short notice. And you know, I know you're down there working out and getting your rest to hit it hard with Barwis. So I really appreciate your time, man.
You bet, man. Anytime.
Yeah, so Jack Johnson joining us from Florida, working out with Mike Barwis again. Famously did a workout with John U. Bacon, and I think John Yu was in the trash can puking within like 15 minutes or something. I know we talked about it at one point. Jack's just the best. That's how you last that long in the league, with your work ethic and intensity that he approaches things with. And, you know, I have fun with the Michigan stuff on Twitter for sure and on the show, but you know, you have to have a lot of appreciation for the University of Michigan and what they've been. And certainly in the hockey program, it's awesome. And I got to say, Yost Ice Arena is a bucket list item for humans. You don't even have to be a sports fan, hockey fan, or anything. just the atmosphere there is unbelievable, really unmatched. There's nothing like it, certainly in hockey at any level. So I do recommend it, begrudging as it may be. Ben, appreciate you. Justin Spiro, Off the Curve. Thanks again to Jack Johnson.